You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hello out there, all you friendly Force users, and welcome to another episode of Echo Station Podcast. I'm your host, Chris, and I'm here with my ever-lovely co-host, Ian.
Hello, it's me.
Hi, and today we are back for another season of our mini episodes, I guess, like a mini series episodes of The Manifesto. And we have a very special guest with us today, Mr. Lawrence Green.
Hello, everybody.
Yay, he's zooming in all the way from sunny Southern California.
How is it there?
Yeah, it's doing quite nice, actually. I mean, you know, with the change of the time, everything kind of shut down a little bit early, but still warm out here. So we're enjoying it for as long as we can. I imagine things are a little bit cooler back where you guys are.
Cold.
Yeah. Well, yesterday was beautiful, but it's pretty cold now. Yeah, it's pretty cold.
Yeah, it's getting towards the wintry season. So,
It didn't snow, though. It snowed last week. So that was a thing.
Yes. That happened. So Lawrence is joining us from sunny California, and we're very, very happy to have him on as a guest to talk everything about the first episode of Mandalorian Season 2. But before we do that, we have a bit of Star Wars news. Chris, what do you have for us?
If you missed it, you might want to check out there was a mini animation drop. I'm forgetting what the series is called. Ian, help me out.
Galaxy of Adventures.
Yes, Galaxy of Adventure. Yes. Mini drop of some nice Obi-Wan Kenobi mythos, if you want to. It's very cute. You know, cute little what. So give that a check out. It's, you know, short little watch, worth watching. And you'll learn some more about Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It reminds me a lot of, like, why isn't this, like, an actual, like, style of a animated series that we're getting? Like, why can't this be a full...
Right, it's very cute. It's very well done.
Why can't it be a full 30 minutes?
It should just be an entire thing. Yeah.
Agreed.
And also, can we get a full Obi-Wan Kenobi series already?
Not until 2021, supposedly.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Not holding my breath, but I'll keep my fingers crossed.
And then other news-wise, not a whole lot is happening. Squadrons got a update where they dropped a bunch of Mandalorian-themed items for your starship. So you can have, like, a Baby Yoda bobblehead inside of your cockpit, which is really cute.
That's great.
And, like, an IG unit and, like, the Razor Crest, like, a little mini Razor Crest and everything. It's really cute. And then the EA has posted a job listing. And it's for, I think, an animator or something. I cannot remember exactly what the job listing was for, but it said for work on a new IP project and a new Star Wars game. Star Wars action
Interesting.
Game.
Interesting.
So we know that, Jedi Fallen Order 2 is going to be coming out. We already know that. And we know there's going to be definitely a sequel for Squadrons because of how well it's done. And Battlefront 3 is somewhere on the horizon, so is it going to be one of those games, or is it going to be a completely new one? I don't know.
It'd be interesting if they decide to put out a completely new property again, and not continue with what they have right now, considering the last few things have been quite a big success.
I don't know. What would you want to see, Lawrence, if it's a new game?
Well, I can't remember her name, but there is a very well-established game producer, and I'm sorry, I'm just having a mental block on her name, and I know she had a Star Wars game in development for some time. I don't know if that was just frozen a few years ago, or if it's been
I know what you're talking about. I think it got, like, dissolved.
Okay, so whatever she was working on, which I was understanding was kind of be the resurrection of the great 1313 from about 10 years ago, which was supposed to be about the Lower Coruscant, which probably would have filled in the backstory on, you know, at least Jango Fett. But that most of that may now be paused because of where we are with The Mandalorian. But if we had some sort of the Star Wars city life, you know, what it was for someone living in that universe on a day-to-day who wasn't, you know, a solo cowboy or an adventurer or a pilot, something along those lines, I think if that's where they're going to kind of fill in that space, I'd be very excited for something like that.
I agree. When they released the trailer and the like small gameplay footage that we got for 1313, I was very excited for it. Oh, yeah. It looked really cool. And then Disney was like, no, you can't have that.
Right. And it was beyond state of the art. It was testing on, I think, as I recall, systems that weren't even mainstream then. So if they were to do that kind of same approach where they're going to really push the art and the horsepower of the machines, especially because we're on the cusp of next gen machines, I think they would have a winner on their hand.
I agree. It reminded me very much of, like, you know, the rumors of, you know, new game engines, new effects and everything. It reminded me very much of how they were advertising the very first Force Unleashed game.
Yes.
With, like, the physics of that game and, like, the wood breaking and the glass, and everything was, you know, real time, basically. And that was going to be in this game, but amplified times 10, basically, is what I understood.
Right. And so if it's something that's sort of the spiritual successor of that, let's have it. I mean, and when I say let's have it, I know we're talking 2 to 3 years if they're hiring, but, you know, let's have it.
Yes. Chris, what would you want to see? It'd
be nice to have something similar like that. I mean, I'm always for really immersive role playing with kind of excessive world building. Put in, you know, we've talked about this before. I would love, and if it happens to be with the Old Republic, it would be even better. I would love to have a Skyrim style Star Wars game.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. That'd be very fun.
Wish list, top of my wish list.
I would love it to be a new IP, but also, like, I'm jonesing for Battlefront 3. I mean, I grew up on the Battlefront games. Actually, today, they released online that it has been 15 years ago today that Battlefront 2, the original Battlefront 2, was released.
Jeez. Wow.
Yeah. So we're recording this on the 1st of November. So 15 years ago today was Battlefront 2's release. So don't you feel old?
Oh, yeah.
I won't That's, say how old I was 15
game
years ago
systems ago, I think.
Help. But yeah. So Battlefront 3, I would love it. I mean, if they integrate what they're doing with Squadrons ship-wise with the space combat in Battlefront 3, I think it's going to make a lot of people happy.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
they learned from their mistakes with the first one, so.
I should hope so.
Well, and the mistakes with the second one, too. So I don't know.
If I see one bit of, like, loot box, I'm going to flip my shit.
I'm convinced they got a rocket docket right from Bob Iger's office after that went down and said, and it just had two words, not again, period. And
yeah.
Or maybe four words, not again, next line, fix it. And that was it.
And they're like scrambling, just going, no. Yeah.
Exactly.
I would hope they learn from their mistakes. But like I said, we don't know. Also, like I said, Jedi Knight, Fallen Order, 2 would be great because that was a fun game. Make it a little bit longer for me.
As long as there's people who
will
pay, you know, who knows?
Mm. Oh, yeah. And of course, it's going to be people who pay because it's Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly.
But so that does it for us news-wise. We're going to take a very quick break and then we're going to have Lawrence talk about himself because you're probably wondering, who the hell is this man? Who is his voice? So stay tuned, guys. We'll be back in just a moment. And we're back. Chris, introduce Lawrence to our listeners.
Sure. So Lawrence and I go way back. I have known Lawrence. I think I was still a teenager when I met you, actually. That's really funny.
At the Fashion Institute, Design Merchandise, Celebration of All Costume Love in, I'm going to say 2005 or 7, something like that. It was a celebration of all the costumes from all the Star Wars movies. It was a 6-month special event.
Yeah,
the film. Design and Merchandise in Los Angeles.
I'm trying to remember what the Dressing a Galaxy exhibit.
Thank you, that's it, Dressing a Galaxy.
Which is where I got the Bible, as we call it on our show.
Yes.
It's the Trisha Biggar giant hardcover coffee table book of all the costumes from the movies that were featured in this beautiful exhibit. I thought we met before that, though. I thought we met at that film thing.
Oh, wait a minute. We did meet, you're right.
We We met on the film thing, right? Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say I still have my Trisha Biggar books in the original case pack.
But mine are so well used, that's even more embarrassing.
Well, touche to you. Mine are just giant memorials to Star Wars. But you're right. Actually, it was at a film project that was being shot on the West Side. And they needed dedicated Star Wars fans to serve as both primarily background actors, but a few small minor roles in support of the main cast.
Yeah, and it was like a spec kind of script. This is when they were just first playing with the idea of there being a live action Star Wars, live action Star Wars series. So we were basically filming what would be a pilot, you know, what they were gonna throw out there. And it ended up, you know, going nowhere. And it's just a fan film, and I'm pretty sure you can probably still find it online. But it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. And
beautiful sets, actually. Yep. Absolutely gorgeous immersive sets. Great sound. They put some great CGI into it. It was very cool. And, you know, the story was cool. But yeah, didn't get picked up. And now here we are, many, many years later, and we have all the Star Wars series. Our dream has been realized, but we are not part of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to those guys' credit, you know, they were bold. They were trying to literally pitch an original idea to make a Star Wars live action show, as Chris said. But while that didn't work, a beautiful friendship right out of Casablanca was born. And,
absolutely.
And here we are, a full trilogy and show later. But it was just part of my Star Wars journey. I go way back with Star Wars. I won't say how many of the original nine or the core nine I've seen in the theater on original screening. I'm old school. And then I'm retired now, or semi-retired, but I was a member of the 501st and the Rebel Legion. Done some work for Lucasfilm in both official and unofficial capacities. If you also want to set your Wayback Machine a little ways on original G4, because G4 TV is coming back in some shape, way, or form.
Yes, it is.
When they needed Star Wars characters for some of their sketches, and this was when G4 had moved to Los Angeles, because they originally started in San Francisco with Tech TV. It was my phone that would ring and be like, well, we need a couple of stormtroopers, or we need a Vader. So I've been fortunate. I've been able to help coordinate, at least back in the day, the G4 Star Wars events. And you can see me in some of the old footage that they used to shoot. I've had my love of Star Wars basically since childhood all the way through now. And I've been able to also kind of give back to the community as well, doing stuff on behalf of the official companies and then the other tie-ins to, you know, show love, protect the brand, and keep spreading the Star Wars love. And I've done quite a few events in an official capacity as Luke, and at charity events, events at the Naval Hospital that deals with childhood intensive care unit. Those don't get quite the press coverage that, you know, the parade in cities get.
Sure.
They're just they're up there on priority for the benefit to the public, and they provided me with a window into just how much love there is for Star Wars. When I would dress to represent, 99% of the time I was Luke. Well, I'm always Luke. It's either Luke in armor or Jedi Luke or in fatigues. Once in a blue moon, it was Luke in the Tatooine, but I had to really grow that 70s mullet out for that one.
That was a funny day. That was a great day.
Yes, it was, because I put my lightsabers down one place, and as there always is in these things, there's always personal drama in the background. Well, I put my lightsabers up vertically, and as the Force would have it, they slid down perfectly and smashed the lenses out of our Darth Vader, who had his helmet on the ground. And since he was being a rather unkind individual, the Force saw its way to justice.
Boy.
Yeah, but we had a lot of fun raising a lot of money for a small comic shop. And so, you know, it's been a journey. But I will say that, you know, at one of the Naval Institute reunions, because that's what they had for children that survived very traumatic medical experiences, there was one small young man there, and his name was Luke, but he wanted to speak with Luke, and he had some severe signs of many of the procedures. He went under a lot of radiation burns, and you know, he was losing his hair, but he was active, and you know, as I recall, I was actually suiting out, and they said, no, Luke wants to meet Luke. So I got back into the gear, went out, spent some time, and I found out sometime later he had fully recovered, and it's been several years since then, but I hope he's still out there loving Star Wars and has a pleasant memory from that. So that's a quick snapshot into some of the things that I've done, and the positive side of being a Star Wars fan. You know, you can always find something to argue about, but it's part of my experience in it is to bring a little joy where I can.
So you said you obviously did work for the 501st and Rebel Legion. Is Luke like your favorite character by chance, or do you have a resemblance to it, or what?
It's both. Luke, growing up, I either wanted to be Luke, or not thinking things through as a kid. You know, the Stormtrooper armor was really cool, but then I'm like, oh, right. Wait, Luke wears Stormtrooper armor. So I can always be the good guy. In fact, the only time I've ever played a quote unquote bad guy, and Chris helped me with this, was when we had to do promo outfits for Star Wars Galaxies, and they needed a bunch of us to go ahead and appear in different characters. And so about 12 people were the armored Jedi, and 12 of us were kind of this Sith acolyte armored character. But I always, I was rolling my dice towards the light, so I was kind of hidden. I'll say, to Chris's credit, literally, I think about 17 minutes before I had to leave to get on to set, she finished it and it rocked. And I still
have sleeves were a bitch.
Yeah, they were. I mean, no underestimation. Chris stayed up until at least 4:30 in the morning, and I had to be up at like 5:30 to start getting ready. But so all that is to say is, I'm not sure I look as much like Luke as other people think I look like Luke, which is, say, Mark Hamill. But I've been very blessed, and there is no other word for it. I do sometimes see what other people are seeing. I have actually been asked more than I care to admit how many times if I am Mark Hamill.
That's a high praise. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
It's very...
I just think you embody him. There's a... I don't want to say swagger, because that's not like really the word that goes around with Luke, but there's something in the way you carry yourself.
The presence.
When you're suited up, it's a presence that is very much, it's Luke.
I thank you for that. And it's funny, a friend of mine has said, when I put on the suit, it's like what Chris is kind of alluding to, I walk different and I stand different. Yeah. So I make the joke, well, that's because of the boots. but he's like, no, it's something else. The one time that really made me realize how I was making it come to life that wasn't for children, because that's in many ways the most important. But the one time that it really came to life is I actually happened to be standing, and I think Chris was with me on this time. It was at Comic-Con, and we had been putting in a full day of work there. And we were at a signing where Mark Hamill was, but the folks came up to me and asked, I'm sorry, are you Mark Hamill? And I'm like, no, that's right over there. So, you know, I've had some wonderful experiences like that. It's very flattering. I try to downplay it as much as possible, because
this is true. I can attest to this.
You know, it sometimes also kind of makes me nervous, because I don't want to betray, you know, the image that people have of Luke.
Right.
But I do my best. And Chris will attest to one thing, like a lot of, when you're in the costuming community, a lot of people like to do that scene from the original movie where the rebels are putting their hands over their head. I do not do that when I'm in character as Luke. I'm like, that there is no footage of Luke walking down with his hands behind his head, prisoner type thing. I'm like, that is a hard rule.
Yeah, I don't think there ever was. Was there any? Yeah.
No, there isn't. So when people are like, I'm sorry, that is not in character. And I think it stood me well, because as I went higher and higher up in time in the 501st and the Rebel Legion, in the 501st, Alvin Johnson, who's the founder of the 501st, said, "I am the 501st own Jedi Luke." So that's why I kind of split my time in both groups.
Okay.
But, you know, I started getting more and more permission from Lucasfilm. This is pre-Disney and everything. It's a different ballgame now, where the person in charge at the time was like, "You've got this, go ahead and figure it out. You know, I trust you to make the decision on whether or not to do these events." In my background, I'm also an attorney in real life. So if I flipped something to her and I said, "Hey, I think there's a problem here," she'd be like, "Yeah, let's take a look at this." So they knew that I was there to protect the brand and be a good ambassador. So it was very, very flattering, very humbling. And I've had some fun with it. You know, there's no two ways about it. For G4, I'm always a stormtrooper, because they don't do too many, you know, needs for face characters, as we call it.
Right.
But once something weird will happen, and one time they put me in a Captain Kirk-ish
fit. Oh, gosh, I remember
when
that.
One of the producers looked at me and said, "Man, the Star Wars people are going to hate you," because I actually looked like Captain Kirk because of the way I had the hair at the time. So, you know, I've had a lot of fun with it on both sides of it.
Well, you sound like you've lived a very fulfilling Star Wars life. We definitely want to have you on for like a full like profile episode of you, basically.
Oh, thank you.
So, because we, with the stories that you have, Chris and I both agree that you can probably fill out at least an hour, if not more, of
oh yeah, there's a lot to life. Chat about when it comes to costuming in the Star Wars community.
Oh yes, so
and whatnot.
This is our guest, Lawrence. We will have him shout out his social media handles later on towards the end of the episode, but he's going to be joining us for our discussion of The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 1. In my opinion, I think the best episode so far of the whole series, but we'll get into that in a minute. We're going to take another quick little break, and then we're going to do a deep dive into The Mandalorian. So stay tuned, guys. All right, are y'all ready to talk some Mando?
Let's do this.
I'm ready.
So, first off, this episode was directed and written by Jon Favreau.
And it's clear.
Yes. I'm very happy that this season, the reports on the episode lengths are around between like 50 and 55 minutes, instead of like the 35 to 48 minutes that we got in season one.
It was a very satisfying time length.
Yes, it was like basically a mini movie. If I could say that.
No, it was very well paced.
So, okay, Chris, how do you wanna break this down? Do you wanna go from like the very beginning? Do you wanna talk about our favorite moments? How do you wanna do this?
Trying to think. So we decided to watch the closing episode. From last season, we decided to watch last season's finale.
Oh, and then go into season. Gotcha.
And then go into. So, I do feel like they bookended really well.
Mm-hmm.
Because the season closer was very somber. We lost Khalil. We lost our IG, our nurse droid. Yeah, it was pretty sad. We learned about Kara's background,
mm-hmm.
being from Alderaan. So there were a lot of really dark moments. You know, we thought the Mando was gonna die for a moment.
Yep.
It was a dark episode. And this episode, I mean, the fact that it was on Tatooine, it was literally very bright. happens when you've got two sons.
I see but what you did there.
Yeah, you see what I did there. It was very lively, and this was absolutely to the core a space cowboy movie.
Hello, spaghetti western. Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. It.
Timothy Oliphant was a dream. He was just a revelation.
I love him. Adored. He's fantastic.
I love him too. And he was so, he just fit into this bizarre gunslinger Star Wars character mm-hmm. just so well. It fit him like a glove. It was perfect.
So before we hit the Tatooine and the Timothy Oliphant stuff, let's go back because we cannot gloss over the fact that we saw two Gamorrean guards going at it in like a boxing arena.
How great was that?
It was the best.
I was just going to add to that. It gave the universe depth.
Yes.
That it, for obviously a show that's about something that doesn't exist. I mean, it gives authenticity and think of a better way to bring the love of Star Wars. I mean, we know it's by Favreau, but it shows that it's by a fan as well. Mm-hmm. That kind of authenticity is what I think the fans crave and appreciate so much, because we haven't seen the guards since Return of the Jedi, really. Correct. And they're literally guards for Jabba, but they must exist. They must have other ones out there. It's not just the three that we see in the throne room,
right?
Or the room. So to see that they're, you know, the wrestlers of that galaxy going at it, it was refreshing, and it gave that authenticity for that world.
Yeah, this episode, you know, that someone did a lot of research, because there's also a lot of like expanded universe things that happen in this episode that you're like, oh, that wasn't canon before, but sure as shit is now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think John Leguizamo's character was also quite enjoyable to see. I always enjoy seeing a very heavily made up, just very, very alien type character. Yes. With a lot of speaking lines.
Yeah, he was fun. And so the Gamorrean guards, let's talk about them real quick, because when I was growing up, when I would watch Return of the Jedi, they were always like the funniest things to me for some reason, because there were these giant green pigs with axes and like a fur skirt and like gladiator sandals. And it always made me teehee.
Yeah. Well, they look like something out of a fantasy barbarian kind of world.
They're ridiculous.
Yeah.
But to see them like basically stripped of everything, and we get to see these vibro axes actually going at it, because we never saw that in the movies. It's like they basically hit each other, and then there's like a little force field, I guess, on the weapon itself. We never got to see that. So to see that actually happen was really cool, because a vibro axe, you're like, does it vibrate? What is a vibro axe? What is that? I don't get it.
Yeah.
And to see that, it
reminded me of, you know, my favorite Star Wars game of all time, right?
Oh, yes.
The very obscure Master of the Teras Kasai fighting game from the 90s on the PlayStation. You could be the Gamorrean guard.
Oh, could you really? I did not know that.
My brother would often stick, yeah. It's just it took me back there. It was fantastic.
That's very funny.
So that really is then, I think, a pull for the fans of that game. And again, that goes to a fan being the creator and the driving force behind this.
Absolutely.
And I think that's everything.
I agree. The whole fight scene was great. I love when he takes out the little whistling darts or whatever, and the baby's just like, peace, I'm gone. I don't need this. And then he just shuts himself in the thing. And the Mando just like kicks the pram, just like... I'm like, sir,
I need a pram like child. That. The thing's been through a lot.
Yeah, right. I thought it was
for me,
great.
There was also
Zabrix in there too, if you didn't notice that. I didn't know if you guys saw that or not, but two of the people that he throws knives at are Zabrix, yeah. So cool little tidbit there too.
All that, and then the what I'll call the reality of it, just he is such a intelligent character, Din, that when the surviving guard jumps out, he doesn't fight with it. He just steps aside and let the guard knock himself out on the bench as he hits the ground. And to me, that fits the character perfectly. It's like, I don't need to waste my effort with this guy.
Yeah. Exactly. I also like that he says that I'm not gonna kill you, but then he kills him basically.
Yes, that. Well, but he didn't. He left him to die.
But he's like, that's very, very fine line, but I guess I'll accept
it. Ask the lawyer about this.
Yeah, he did say, not by my own hand.
Not by my own hands, exactly.
And when he said that, I thought to myself, well, that's going to be interesting.
Exactly. And so I'm dying to know what those things were.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm just going to say, like, rabid Jawas. I don't know.
Rabid Jawas.
Just Jawas with, like, rabies. I don't know.
Well, it reminded me of that old Vin Diesel movie.
Oh, really?
Pitch Black.
Pitch Black. Oh, sure.
Yeah. It's like that moment. I don't know. That was creepy. I don't know what it's those like things were, but
one of the movies that Vin Diesel actually acts in.
Yes. And then and then there was that weird Chronicles of Riddick that went, I don't know, that whole thing was crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And then we find out Tatooine, which again, Chris and I during our Mandalorian season 2 rumors, we were like, a desert planet does not mean it's Tatooine. It would be great if it was Tatooine, but it doesn't mean it's Tatooine. And well, fuck us, because it was Tatooine.
We always say this. We're like, just because it's a desert planet doesn't mean it's going to be Tatooine. And it always ends up being Tatooine.
Yeah.
Well, what's so funny is, you know, during the prequel era, people were like, oh my gosh, is this such a small galaxy? Why do we keep going back to Tatooine? But now we're like, all right, we're going back to Tatooine. Let's see what it's bringing us.
I think it's because it's the desert planet now. Well, it's the desert planet that doesn't like piss off fans as much, I don't think, because now fans are like super pissed if you mention Jakku because of from someone's from there, and it's just like, shut up.
Yeah.
Stop it.
But yeah, it was very nice to see our little what's her name?
Amy
Sedaris. Mechanic friend.
Paley Motto.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's fantastic. I was glad to see her role come about again.
I also
the band
found
that they have
that,
together is very cute.
Well, and she was a lot funnier in this. She was a lot funnier in this episode than I thought in her original debut episode. Maybe it's because of Favreau's writing. I'm not quite sure. But she's like, you know, how much for him? No, I'm kidding. But really, how much for him? I'm like, that made me chuckle. That was very funny.
My daughter was watching it with me, because this is like her favorite thing in the world. And she mentioned, because she watches me play a lot of Skyrim and Fallout and things, she was like, this is like a quest NPC. Because she kind of went off into this little spiel, and it very much sounded like, I am now putting you on a quest.
You're not wrong.
Oh, it's 100%. And then when they bring up the map, it's literally you're on the global map where you're trying to find your waypoints, and then you got to set your destination. Yeah. And I will say it's really nice. It's not retcon, but it's nice fill in the blanks, because we've heard about Mos Espa and everybody knows Mos Eisley.
Yeah.
Now we have a new city, because surely there has to be more than two cities on Tatooine.
Yep.
And the way she explained that it's sort of a rumor and it's gone now and haven't heard about it, it all fits as to why maybe it wouldn't be on the top of everybody's visit list in the original and prequel trilogies. No need to talk about it, because city's basically been blown off the face of the planet.
Yeah. It's what's Mos Paley? What's it called again?
Mos Pelgo, I think.
Pelgo. Okay.
Yeah.
For some reason, my mind went to Placenta, and I'm like, that's not right, Ian. Don't say that. That's not.
Okie dokie.
Mos Placenta on Tatooine.
That's on the dark side of Tatooine.
Yeah, that sounds like a bad guy, actually.
Right, did we just create a new bad guy? Oh my god, wait a minute.
Let's just, we need to copyright this. I don't know what it looks like.
Yeah, no. it was nice to see it not take place in a city that we knew. It was a
place of Tatooine. Building.
Yes.
What we're here for, the world building.
Because honestly, like, besides Mos Espa and Mos Eisley, I'm like, there's a lot of sand, and I don't know anything else really about the planet, but that's, you know, it.
Well, and it's nice to see, you know, kind of circling back to when we were talking about the video games that we'd like to see. It's nice to see everyday sort of people coming into the Star Wars universe, and, you know, seeing the miners and how people just go about their everyday life in this galaxy and how they make a living.
I think that's 100%, because, you know, we know Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru as Luke's caretakers, but they were farmers. You know, they had a to-do list every day and whatever. So that story has closed out. But what about the other people who just lived on the planet and tried to make their lives there? You know,
I didn't really think that, because, you know, obviously you know about moisture farming, because that's the big commodity at Tatooine, but I didn't even think about mining, because they have a bunch of mountains there, but I didn't even think about mining as a job on Tatooine.
Well, see, I figured that the moisture farmers were actually only there to sustain the fact that people had to live there to be using some other kind of commodity, some natural resource, because you're not going to live on a planet that you couldn't live on unless you, you know, have to use all this technology to get water. Right. Unless there's another reason to be there in the first place.
Which makes sense. And also, funny enough, my coworker and I were talking, and he said, what if Tatooine wasn't always Tatooine? What if it was actually lush and green, and people just destroyed the planet, and they had to leave, and then it got re-inhabited by, you know, Tusken Raiders, and then eventually the other inhabitants, and it was a desert planet? I'm like, that's a cool backstory if that ever does happen, because...
That's interesting.
Yeah. You know, there's still moisture in there. Well, we know the Tusken Raiders have been there for thousands of years. Yes.
Thousands of years, yeah. And I find that interesting, too, because I've always wondered if they were, in fact, native, I guess you'd say, native to the planet.
Yeah.
Some years ago, I did read something. I don't know if it's canon, but I think the Tuskens and the Jawas are native, and they just grew up as two dominant bipeds over like whatever the natural habitat or natural animal background is there, which would be like dragons and that type of thing. But now that does leave open up the option to say, no, there could have been something before that if the reference is just for a couple thousand years.
Yeah.
Well, and we had talked about the Jawas, where they originate from on last season's episodes when they encountered the Jawas.
Yeah,
and on a completely different planet. So I'm wondering, you know, like they're not spacefaring as far as we know. So how do they get to these other planets? Where did they originate? I'd like to know. I mean, Jawas aren't hugely important.
Disney Plus series, The Jawa.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So basically, you know, he's tasked to go out and, you know, find this other Mandalorian. And of course, we're all thinking who it's going to be. Like, it's not, there's no question in our mind who the hell is going to be on Tatooine.
Right.
So, you know, he gets to the bar and questions about the Marshal. And sure enough, we see this man in Boba Fett's armor.
Which was, I loved that silhouette and the fact that it fits him so poorly.
Yeah. Right? Like, the chest piece, it doesn't cover, like, any of his chest hardly. It's like.
That was great. And, you know, it actually reminds me, funny enough, Lawrence, you might remember this. That random pilot episode that we filmed, this pilot episode also took place after Return of the Jedi, so it would have been kind of like concurrent with The Mandalorian, time-wise. And there were random mercenaries who wore stormtrooper armor, but it didn't fit them well.
Right,
so it looked just like that, and it totally reminded
me. That's funny.
Yeah.
And I think the attention to detail that Favreau put into it. So it's the Boba Fett armor. We recognize it. But, you know, his under tunic colors aren't right. And his walk is more, I don't know how to say it. It's Timothy Oliphant. You know, it's truly a law enforcement type walk. It's not the Boba Fett walk.
Yeah.
And we didn't get the spurs per se.
Yeah, you know, I was looking for those.
We were hinted at the spurs in the first season.
Yes.
In episode 5. But we didn't get the spurs on this one. So you knew it wasn't quite right. And then the fact that he just takes off the helmet without even a moment's pause after we spend so much time learning that Mandos don't take their helmet off. So it was like, well, this is going to be a great reveal. And it really.
I can only imagine Mando's face when that happens. I was like, oh, he's not going to like this.
Yeah, because you even see when he takes off the helmet, he's like walking towards me. He walks back. He's like, excuse me?
Yeah.
What? And it's Timothy Oliphant's beautiful face.
Oh, yes. But we also know, as the audience, obviously, Mando doesn't know this, that Boba Fett and Jango weren't really Mandalorians anyway. They took their masks off all the freaking time.
Yep.
True.
And I mean,
he doesn't know that.
And so does, you know, Bo-Katan, and so does Sabine. So it's like,
I'm still very, very confused about what is canon and what the Mandalorians actually are. And
I agree.
Yeah, I feel like the Mandalorians are also very confused about what they are.
That's fair. But let's talk about the armor real quick, because clearly it's been through some stuff. It's not still like the green that we know. It still has the hints of it, but there's a bunch of bite marks in there. There's scratches. There's all kinds of stuff that's not necessarily from blaster wear. It's maybe from being eaten by something.
Digested.
Yes. So when you saw that armor for the first time, did you automatically think, oh, Boba must be alive? Or did you think that, you know, they got the armor some other way?
I think in the context of the reveal, because you have a new character wearing it and because it looks so beat up, I told myself, well, maybe they're saying, maybe the press for the last couple of months was kind of a feint, and so they're not going to reveal that Boba Fett is still alive, and it's just that his armor, for lack of a better phrase, and his legend is still alive. First, I was thinking that this guy was doing the legend of Boba Fett, and he was going to marshal that, for lack of a better phrase, to his advantage to lay law and order down. Right. I'm very happy with how they took it on its own angle, where he really is just a lone gunman trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I started to wonder if they were going to go ahead and do a switcheroo and be like, no, you know what? It really isn't Boba Fett. We were just kind of teasing that along, but his armor will be part of the show.
That's how I kind of thought of it too. So
yeah, I kind of had a moment where I ran the logistics in my head about how the Jawas could have gotten it, because I mean, we know the Sarlacc isn't going anywhere. You know, it's the Pit of Carcoon for a reason. Like, it's a place you go to. It doesn't move. So where would the Jawas just randomly come upon this armor if it hadn't been removed from the pit somehow? And I don't think that the Jawas are just, you know, sticking their long arms down in the Sarlacc mouth for...
Let's see what we can grab out.
I just don't think that's happening.
No.
So for me, it was like, well, the armor got out somehow, and I'm going to assume that it either blasted its way out or it walked out, you know, of its own accord. However,
I kind of assumed that.
How did he lose it?
Maybe it got upchucked or something. I don't know. Maybe it just got thrown up because, you know, armor's maybe hard to digest. I don't know.
Sure.
But so, yeah, Timothy Oliphant in this was fantastic. I loved him. He was very funny too.
He was very funny. Yeah. Good comedic timing.
Yes.
I was worried that they were going to pull, we want you to like this swaggery character, but he's definitely going to be a bad guy in the end. I'm glad that they kept him as a genuine.
Oh, like with the previous bounty hunter that everyone thought was a douchebag and no one liked.
Exactly. Oh, that's stupid douche bro. Oh.
Yeah. Like, you're glad he's dead. Yeah.
So glad he's dead.
So we get a great shot of whatever this creature is that's underground. It's a Trimmer. Call Kevin Bacon.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
And this is our first time in canon seeing a crate dragon.
Yes. How fantastic is that? Because this, like, is a creature we have heard so much talked about.
Well, we have the big skeleton.
Yeah, well, right. We have the skeleton.
A live That's one, it. Rather.
Right.
But even from the skeleton, I mean, I would have never guessed the actual size of this thing.
Oh, yeah. No. Never. It's this huge, you know, I guess it's more of like a slug or a worm rather than a dragon that we know with wings and legs and all that stuff.
It kind of reminded me, though, I mean, facially wise, of the Game of Thrones dragons.
Because of the horns and stuff, I assume?
Yeah, and like that one dragon that Harry Potter ends up fighting.
Oh,
in the Triwizard Tournament.
Something,
the
something from Hungarian the somewhere.
Something or something. Yeah.
Hunchback, you know, something.
The very spiky looking evil mean ones. Yeah.
Yes.
That's cool. It definitely red dragon to me.
I agree.
It definitely ran dragon. Wings. I will say I was getting a little nervous. We're going to go full Dune worm here. And I'm like, don't do that.
Yeah, right. I was worried about
I'm not a huge Dune fan. I know, boo, but yeah, that's just me. The way they handled it, I thought, was fantastic. And I agree with Chris. There was definitely that armored dragon, Drogon type, omnipresence vibe to it.
Yes. So they go off and they take off after this this creature, because Mando says, well, I know how to, you know, track it down, basically. And Mando is in his speeder bike, which, by the way, I love the practicality of his speeder, because the shots of him going through the street, or the street, quote unquote, of the town, they don't show the full thing because, you know, it's like on a rig, basically, and they're just pulling it along. So to see that happening is really cool, because that's like old school 70s, you know, effects. Cause they did that with like Luke's land speeder and stuff like that, too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But coming up behind him is Timothy Oliphant and a fucking pod racer engine.
That was awesome.
Basically saying, hey, mine's bigger.
I love that whole, I see your Schwartz is as big as mine, but actually mine's bigger kind of moment.
Yes, it was very funny. And everyone's freaking out because, oh my God, it's Anakin's pod. Look closer, because it's very similar to Anakin's pod, but the markings aren't there. the blue isn't there, and there's a red thing on the pod that Anakin did not have.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, because you said that, and I thought maybe it was too, but I wasn't 100% sure. Like,
it's so very close.
It's very close, but it has been, you know, 4 decades in Star Wars time.
Also true. Since
Anakin won the Bunta. So it is possible, you know, it could be his pod repurposed.
Exactly.
I definitely think it's a visual Easter egg that they can
For sure.
Depending on how they want to go in and do it. Because I could see that core nacelle, you know, from one side of it was preserved or sold off, you know, once he left the planet, that was it. And
repainted, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was repurposed and, you know, because it was a hot rod.
It did make the same noise. So that's what makes me think maybe it is, but
yeah. It's an outer rim desert planet. You know that they're reusing things. They're, you know, they don't have a ton of stuff.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So it makes sense. And it really is a great callback for the prequel fans.
Yes. And it's just, it still is very funny how, you know, Mando's just zooming along and then just like long oblong object is just coming up behind him.
It
totally fits that character. Well,
wow. Oh, it does.
You know, because Cobb is a badass.
To it.
Yes.
The funniest thing.
A circus.
Like, let me attach my sidecar to a podracer engine and let me just zoom on down.
He's letting him know that he's only keeping it at quarter speed. So, you know, he's taking it easy on him.
Exactly. I thought that was one of the greatest things of the episode because that's very funny. And by the way, can we just talk about the fact that most, if not all of this, is shot on that soundstage?
Yes.
That's pretty crazy.
Because
it's down here in LA near Manhattan Beach, and it is phenomenal what they're able to do in that combined area.
It looks they went to Tunisia and shot there. Like, it's
okay. So absolutely. That's what I was wondering. We were discussing this while watching the episode, if they had gone back, because that would be my thought. Like, obviously you can't go to Tatooine and not go to Tunisia, but I guess
no, it was all basically shot on a soundstage, maybe except for I think maybe the arena stuff in the very beginning, maybe that was an actual practical set they built, but everything else, and like the bar obviously is a practical set for the most part and everything, but most everything else is all soundstage work with That's various incredible. Like rocks and stuff painted in, and then sand I assume on the floor for texture and stuff like that.
Yeah,
sure. That's incredible. Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm just like, what, like I said, it has that cinematic quality, and that's because of what's happening with at Lucasfilm and with that soundstage and everything. So they get to where they're going, and turns out that the Mando is enlisting the help of the Tusken Raiders.
Yay!
We can see more Tusken, we can see more of their culture too, more of their
I love that we've humanized them.
Yeah. Anakin, after we get to see Anakin asshole.
Slaughter them. Yeah, really? Seriously, this just builds the case against Anakin.
Yeah, it doesn't help him at all.
So I had a laugh because for years, a lot of members of the 501st, so the Tuskens are an outfit that is on the 501st side, because they've been wrongly made out to be just pure villains.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of the fans or members have Tusken outfits, and I'm like, they've finally been redeemed, because I couldn't understand the allure to they're very complicated, very advanced outfits, and incredibly claustrophobic and hot. And I just couldn't understand the allure to have 20, 30, well, now they've been vindicated. So I'm like, okay, I get it. Absolutely. But these are now fully realized people, you know, there's a population, there's communication, there's structure, there's integrity. And to the producer's credit, I try not to go ahead and read too much backstory, so I can come into it fresh, but one of the actors who plays a Tusken is actually hearing impaired, and
he was the one who
developed their language, because one of the hearing actors was saying, you know, to do this right, we should go ahead and get a hearing impaired actor to give depth to how we're communicating. So credit to the production team on that.
Absolutely fantastic. I agree. That's
not only that, but also, you know, Chris and I always say this, that representation matters.
Absolutely.
And this is a huge monumental thing to be represented, not only for the deaf community, but to be represented in Star Wars.
Absolutely.
Like, that's huge. I mean, to be represented, like I said, in general is great, but in something that's watched by millions of people and loved by millions of people, that's super just great. And I love that, you know, the Mandalorian is saying, you know, they were here thousands of years before. They've studied these creatures. They, you know their eating habits, or they know their sleeping habits, whatever it may be. And, you know, just let's trust them and let's see what they have to say. And
I thought it was fantastic stealth commentary about, you know, giving credit to indigenous peoples who really know the land. And yes. It's not always about the technology. It's about communicating and taking the best approach, and maybe an expert who's local to the area might just be able to share something that, you know, an outsider may not know.
Exactly. And it's a, you know, it's a great life lesson to learn too. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and I just hope,
you know,
from an in-universe perspective, I kind of hope that this opens up relations between the miners and, you know, original off-worlders who are now working on Tatooine and living on Tatooine to really actually come together and vibe with the Tusken Raiders and, you know, have an alliance and
realize they're vibing that and chilling with the Tusken Raiders.
They can vibe and chill, but that they're beneficial to each other, and there's no reason to be, you know, having all this animosity and just against each other constantly and be, I don't know.
Well, I think you're right there. I like one of the hidden pens at the beginning, or not the beginning, but when they first meet, you know, Timothy Oliphant, he doesn't want to have the water that comes out of that sort of
gore black thing. Smoke. Yeah.
Fruit thing. But then at the end, when they're facing the Krayt Jagan and it's all out there, he just cracks open and he takes a drink and he's like, oh, we're all in on
what
this.
We do. Yep. And, you know, it's such a, that's such a realistic thing. I mean, even, so my background is anthropology, and I've worked in the field in many different countries, and sharing a drink is such a universal cultural thing to bond for new people, and to reject a drink that has been offered to you, and it's happened to me. It is not cool in any culture.
No.
It's incredibly offensive, and you know, I've seen students do it. I've seen students who thought they were better, you know, are just being disgusted, and you know, guess who wasn't getting their research done.
Yeah.
Just take the damn drink.
Yeah. I really did like that scene where the Tusken like got like, and rightfully so, he got pissed off. He's like, look, we're trying to broker peace here. The least you could do is drink out of my black gourd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The least you could do, sir.
I was thinking it was going a different direction and they were all gonna get high.
Why? Oh, because the spores
were coming off that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
yes,
what I thought.
Yes.
I was like, ooh, they're tripping on some Tatooine peyote. This is gonna be good.
All of a sudden, you just hear like a snorting sound in the background. You're like, "Oh no!"
Exactly. No, that's absolutely where I thought that was going.
The Mando gets a.
Although I could see a definite need to get wound up if you're going up against a Krayt Dragon. So sure,
that makes sense.
Yeah. And then towards the end, they all grow out like a Carrie Fisher Coke nail, and then they can just, you know.
Oh Jesus.
Get it all good. So also, can we talk about the fact that they had banthas in this episode?
Yes,
a lot. And they always march single file.
They're so cute.
Yeah, it's amazing that the detail, like, you know, and another director could have been like, okay, we're gonna put a bantha here and left right. It's like, no, they go single file. That is no to cover their trails.
They gotta hide their numbers. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
And again, the authenticity, it makes it just feel that much more grounded in the universe. And it's those kind of subtle callbacks I know that George Lucas once was asked about, well, how come the whole thing with Ben versus Obi-Wan, and he very famously said, continuity is for wimps, which he can say that.
Yeah.
But the rest of us, we need that continuity.
We need our continuity.
Walk single file. We need to have the Tuskens putting the gappy stick over its head and doing the roar that's kind of happening and all that. That's what makes Star Wars come alive.
Yeah. And I loved the callback to Obi-Wan Kenobi originally using the Krayt Dragon yell to scare away the Tusken Raiders. And we know the absolute worst thing that a Tusken Raider can encounter is a Krayt Dragon. They are terrified of it, and that is what will make them run away.
Yep. It's a smart decision to keep that in there, and it makes so much sense now for episode 4 and everything. So originally the Banthas were in episode 4 they were elephants and covered in that fur and the horns and everything. These Banthas looked smaller than what the original ones were in episode 4, obviously. So I'm gonna guess that it was maybe a horse of some kind. Maybe
they don't look that small.
They weren't as big as the other Banthas like in episode 4, because the Banthas in there were elephant size.
I don't know, maybe they're practical, just complete builds. Oh. I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe. Probably just a artificial a thing, and then they was just kind of CG'd in, like the way Daenerys would be on the dragon. You know, she's
yeah. on a oh, saddle. Yeah. Well, if that was I mean, pure the, CGI, that was fantastic CGI.
The 501st built a Bantha. There was a whole big project, the Bantha project, I don't know, like a decade ago? I can't remember.
I mean, it can be done.
Yeah,
but, right.
And I suppose they could have brought in one elephant and just modified it. But yeah. I'll agree with Chris. They looked larger than a horse, but now I see where you're coming from, maybe smaller than an elephant. So I'm going to say that they might have just been something done on set with, you know, various contraptions.
Well, and again,
well, they were on a soundstage.
Yeah.
Now that I know that they're on a soundstage, they weren't out in the, you know,
in the wild.
Wild. So it would probably be harder to have a bunch of elephants on a soundstage.
I agree.
In costume.
But so, yeah, they get to like this open mouth where they said there's a sarlacc there, and the crate. We know the sarlacc eats everything, but we don't know what eats the sarlacc until today.
That reminded me of the Phantom Menace bit from Naboo. The big fish. There's always a bigger fish.
Yes.
Yeah, there's always a bigger fish.
But see, this was another great callback because until this episode, I thought, okay, there's only one Sarlacc. It's at the Pit of Carcoon.
Me too.
Sarlacc is just another wild animal out there. Part of the fauna, I guess. And then they die off too. And then crate dragons are kind of like, you know, crabs looking for a new home, and they just take over the pit or something like that. Yeah, and you can
basically.
So maybe the sarlaccs are more a rarer species. Maybe they live a really long time. So maybe, you know, that's why this particular one is infamous for where it is. You know, maybe they have a large territory swath, so there's only a handful of them.
Well, yeah, because it says the digestion is over thousands of years. So
yeah,
they got to live
for. So they are around for a long time.
Yeah.
So there's probably only, you know, like a dozen of them on the planet. Who knows?
Right.
But then we get to see in full the crate dragon. And when it comes out of that cave, like the way the sand's coming off of it, the way that it picks up the Tusken Raider, I'm like, this is all like, see, this is beautiful.
Mm.
I loved it. It was fantastic.
It was very cool looking. I was very surprised. I honestly did not expect it to be that big. Just the sheer enormity of it was daunting. It did feel like there was actual danger. It was very enjoyable.
The dragon had weight, for lack of a better phrase, and agree with what you said, you know, at the very beginning, that the whole episode felt like a movie, and that was absolutely, you know, tier one movie level LFL effects.
Oh, for sure.
ILM. I mean, they made that seem as realistic as anything could that you would watch on a big screen, you know, debut cinema type experience.
Yeah. It wasn't like there were a few episodes of last season where I kind of felt like, all right, we're going on a side quest. You know, this felt like a whole thing on its own, not just a random side quest because we need to fill in an episode and make it interesting. No, this felt very thought out. Very methodical.
It did, because even the disruptor bolts, you know, or rather the disintegration bolts, the famous disintegration rifle, had no effect on it because it's such a huge animal.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
They had to use strategy. They couldn't just brute force it.
Yes. And I like also where he goes back to the town saying, hey, we found a solution. We can do this. We can, you know, defeat this, but you know, that we're going to have help with the Tuskens, and the whole town just goes apeshit. They're like, no, right. We don't want their help. They're, you know, savages and everything. And he says,
very much the Western xenophobic Texan town in the Wild West kind of thing.
And he says a line that kind of stayed with me was that, you know, they said that if you help them kill this creature and they get the basically goods from this creature, that they will broker peace with your town and they will not raise a blaster to you until you do it first.
Yes.
That's very the good line. Until you do it first. That was really stuck with me because I'm like, yeah, because they're all like idiots. And of course they're going to fire on them first after this thing. It wouldn't be the Tusken Raiders.
Yeah.
No. And I think they did the hidden pin there and the foreshadowing, you know, because when the one explosive was dropped, the one guy completely has a disproportionate reaction.
Yeah.
And then Timothy Oliphant, who not more than 20 minutes earlier was skeptical, is like, okay, just relax, you know, it was an accident. We're all in this together. Sometimes you got to go ahead and see what the greater good is. Exactly. And I agree with you. It had perfect shades of some Kurosawa and some classic Ford Westerns where, you know, the two sides have to come together because there is a greater threat here.
Yes.
And so they do come together. They plant the explosives that they have, which, by the way, that town has a shit ton of like explosives just like laying about, yeah, which is very funny. Yeah. I'm like,
for a tiny little town, that's a little disconcerting.
It's like two or three banthas full of explosives, which, I mean, right, they're, well, miners, now I'm worried about, so I get mining. It, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then now they're probably not going to be able to get their job done for a while.
Well, look, so, you know, they have a whole plan. I love the Tusken Raiders. They're like, they're not crossbows, but I don't know what they're called technically.
Yeah, long rifles?
Yes. No, the ones that like shoot the arrows.
The Dragon Slayer bolts.
Yes. I don't know if they're technically called crossbows or not.
They were like giant crossbows.
Is it a ballista?
Ballistas, yes.
Yes. I love seeing that. That was fantastic to see not only Tuskens that have, you know, rifles and their gaffy sticks, but they have these projectile weapons that can, you know, harpoon something.
Yeah.
It was fantastic, although because the Game of Thrones is still in my head, I was like, well, we know how this is going to go.
Exactly. I know. Yeah. It's like, really? Are we going to shoot down Drogon again?
Exactly.
So it turns out that their plan doesn't really go off without a hitch. It doesn't really work for the first part, naturally, of course. And so Mando and what's Timothy Oliphant's character's name again?
Cobb. Vance, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Mando and Cobb, they, you know, fly up to go and shoot the creature. And I don't know why it gave me chills, but as soon as I heard Boba's jetpack, like the sound, that mm-hmm. classic sound.
Wasn't that cool?
Yeah, I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. And also, I love the Easter egg that Mando says, protect the kid. And he goes, what do you mean? And he hits the same side that Han hits.
Yes.
And launches them up.
That's true. I missed that. Clearly, missed that connection. Dang.
Boba's jetpack was faulty to begin with, but damn.
He needs to get, what happens when you're not a real Mandalorian?
Needs to get that shit looked at.
Well, you don't have an armor to go back to. Now we know.
That's also true.
Now we know what happens.
But yeah, that was a great, great callback to Return of the Jedi, because I'm like, is he hit? And like when I rewatched that scene from Jedi, I'm like, and that's the same spot that he hit too.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And I will go ahead and say, as kind of filling in the blanks, because I think Favreau, you know, again, as the fan that we all are working on it, the living the dream, we finally get to see the rangefinder in a live action show, not one of the
animals. Yes, I know.
Yes.
Finder work, dial in, and then have his own Tony Stark against the tank moment where he just fires it, it's off in the distance, and then wham.
That was totally a Tony Stark moment. It was very, very Iron Man-esque. That's a good comment. That's a good comparison.
Yeah. It was great to see that, because you never really see that happen with Boba. You only see it go down. You're just like, oh, what the hell is he looking at? I don't know.
Exactly.
I think you see it maybe like once in the Clone Wars, but it kind of just like passes you by. I think Rex does it or something, or Cody maybe, I don't know. But so eventually they blow up the dragon after many, many tries. And they're like harvesting the meat, and I remembered in the EU that the crate dragon were very valuable because they had pearls inside of them.
I was wondering where that came from.
It was an EU thing from way back when, and sure enough, the Tusken Raider pulls out this giant ass pearl, like the fucking Jawas went in that goddamn egg, and it's like, look,
that's what my husband said. He was like, oh, are we back to the egg thing?
Yeah, he Simbas it and is like, we have the pearl.
Interesting. I was wondering what was up with the egg or the pearl.
I thought it was an egg also.
A pearl, but I was wondering, but it caught to me in my mind, it brought me back to the egg from the second episode.
Yes.
And that was like, all right, where are we going with this? But
I don't know. I'm like, if they crack the thing open and start eating it, I'm gonna be real pissed.
No, I think you're right. That's got to be the treasure. I didn't think about the EU connection. That's got to be the treasure that they really wanted. And the rest of the group was very happy for, you know, we got the RRR. So, I mean, yep. It was their capstone for the...
I do want to know, though, like, do they trade that for current? Like, how do they... I wonder what they do with that. If they worship it or something, or what?
I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting.
As, like, a big necklace? I don't know.
I don't know. It's very... it was very interesting. I would like to know more, because it was such a quick moment, but I was thinking about it after. I had no idea it had a connection.
And then, of course, we can't end this episode without talking about two things. One, of course, the return of Baby Yoda.
Yes.
Because he had some really cute moments in this. I like when they put, like, the meat on the back of the speeder. He's just, like, starting to pick at it, and Mando's like, no. We cook first. And he had some really cute, you know, he was, like, in a saddle and everything, and... I did like yelp the screen at one point because I think both of them left the baby just like by himself at one point.
I know. He's very cavalier with this thing.
Yeah. He just like leaves really them.
As a parent, it makes me very nervous.
And the baby's just like sitting in the satchel. I'm just like, wait. Oh wait. who is watching baby?
I also have one of those bags, and I'm pretty stoked that now I know I can make one and carry my little doll around.
There you go.
And so for, you know, I come at it a little bit different. I enjoyed the fact, this is going to sound weird, I enjoyed the fact that for the premiere of this season, Baby Yoda wasn't the fixture that the whole episode revolved around. I thought that
it was not the focal point. I agree. Yeah,
exactly. It gave it some depth, because if we're always doing a Baby Yoda episode, and I do love Baby Yoda, then I'm wondering if we, you know, do too much Baby Yoda. But by doing it this way, I just felt like, oh, you know, you hit the tone just perfectly. And yet, when the big battle was going on, part of me was going, all right, they keep coming back to Baby Yoda. Are we going to have a little force, impact on the battle?
Do the hand thing. And do the hand thing.
Yeah, do the hand thing. Exactly. But we didn't go there. And so I was like, no, you hit it just right. Just because we'll get a lot of Baby Yoda for the remaining episodes. But this was to say, this is the journey. This is the path.
Yeah. Well, it was nice that it's about him, ultimately, because they wouldn't be there if it wasn't, they weren't searching for his people. But it wasn't about him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so Timothy Olyphant gives him back the armor and says, you know, just make sure you tell your people that I did not fuck this up. This already came to me like this.
I was kind of surprised that he ended up making him give it back still, because I almost felt like now that he's seen that he's a good person, that he's literally there to protect these people, to help them, that he would leave the armor with him so that he could better protect these people.
I assume that he's going to maybe modify it himself, or he'll take it to maybe the armor when we see her again and be like, hey, what's this?
Oh, see, that'd be interesting, because maybe she has the 411
insight.
Django and Boba.
So,
well, I think now that Boba knows his armor is back in the wild, because obviously Boba's alive and has been, he knows he's had the armor all this time. So that's how I'm reading it. So he's been passively allowing it to serve a purpose. I think Boba is, for lack of a better phrase, reformed, but he's still Boba. So I'm curious to see where this goes. I think eventually we will get the payoff, which we've all wanted for years, where maybe not for a couple episodes, maybe not until next season, but somehow I have a feeling that Boba Fett will live and fly again in totality. You know, he'll put the armor back on.
So let's talk about that for a second. So the episode ends, of course, with a mysterious bald figure looking at the Mando, taking, you know, going away, and turns around, and sure enough, it is Temuera Morrison, minus the eyebrows.
Why does the eyebrows?
He turned to a drag queen. He turned to a drag queen. Acid in a stomach will do that. He shaved the eyebrows.
I yelled at my screen.
Oh, I did too.
I yelled, holy shit, and I had to apologize because there were children present.
I did that as well, but I did not apologize because there was no children around me. So when this happened, I was like, oh my fucking God. Like, this is... So since Return of the Jedi, he has technically been dead this whole time, because when Disney bought it, when Disney, you know, purchased it, they retconned all the EU, and the EU, he came back in the comics and whatnot. But when with Disney purchasing Star Wars, Boba Fett was still dead for this whole time. No matter how many of the fans, you know, crying and whining about it, he was still dead. You know, this past Friday solidifies that Boba Fett is alive, and that is now canon. And yeah, you know, a bunch of fanboys, when they saw that, they just got like, just like the biggest hard-on for Boba Fett and just was going nuts.
Well, and I think it was a fantastic...
Which I still don't get, but whatever.
Well, and I think it's a reveal that, and you know, who's to say that Cobb's backstory on how he got the armor is true? We might be having a touch of the Joker here, spinning a different story depending on who his audience is.
That's a good right. point.
But, and like I said, I just have this feeling that Boba Fett knows where the armor has been, because if he's the marshal of the town, that word kind of gets out, and didn't seem that Boba Fett was too far away from the town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think also Boba Fett, they're trying to show that it's not the person we've grown up with, for lack of a better phrase, because no, it's true, he's not a full Mando. He is, however, the only natural / perfect clone of his father. He has a different perspective. But he's carrying a gaffy stick and a long rifle. He, unless I missed it, he does not have his EE3, and the marshal doesn't have it, so he's not the same guy.
I didn't see it. He also was wearing a poncho, so it could be under there. I'm not quite sure.
True.
But so my theory on this whole thing is that yes, he's alive. So does this mean that he will be trying to track down his armor now? So he will be kind of a shadow on the Mandalorian this whole entire season, and we'll get a bigger reveal towards the season finale or season 3, because you don't bring back a character like this and then just not show him the rest of the season. You just don't do that.
Agreed.
So he has to be somewhere else in the season. So I'm thinking he kind of just is a shadow and just kind of follows him from, you know, location to location until finally he's like, give me that back.
Yeah. Well, so I was thinking, did he know about the marshal? Has he been keeping tabs on that? Or has he been keeping tabs on other things? Like, does he, you know, if nobody knows who he is, he can easily travel in and out of the various mosses. You know, mm-hmm. I'm sure he's got some feelers out in Mos Eisley. And here comes Mando, and he's asking about other Mandalorians, and that's a key word that maybe he's had people in his network.
Yeah.
Have as a tip off and be like, you know, if
it's somebody a Google alert. Asking about...
It's a Google alert. If somebody's asking about Mandalorians, I want to know.
Yeah.
Well, and he may be doing the Clint Eastwood, you know, lone gunman who goes from town to town to help people. The marshal's there permanently, but he may be going town to town. But let's face it, Boba Fett's out of a job. His employer, Jabba the Hutt, died 5 years earlier. His mark, Han Solo, is now a rebel general and hero of the rebellion, and mm-hmm. his best bud, Jedi, who kind of screwed things up for Boba Fett, you know, early on. So,
and he doesn't have the Empire to employ him.
He doesn't have the Empire, so he might just be like, you know what, that career path not working out too well. So he may just be doing the man with no name approach, which would fit in, I think, with the Western theme. And also, big fan, the right age for that kind of homage, and it just kind of fits because. I come back again, we had the Spurs in season 1, and only Boba wears the Spurs, and the way he walks, it's just menacing, and yet a statement all at once of like, I'm in control, let me assess this.
And so Chris and I were talking in our Mandalorian season 2 rumor that Lucasfilm never confirmed Temuera Morrison, that we never saw him in any trailer, so we told ourselves that we're not believing this until we see it on screen. Same thing goes with Ahsoka, same thing goes with Bo-Katan, same thing with Sabine if she's in this, all this stuff. So when we saw Temuera Morrison as Boba Fett on the screen, we're both like, well, fuck, are these other rumors actually going to be true?
I think it's a great point. And he's, the story arc for Boba can go anywhere. And I think that's what's so beautiful. And it will go ahead and, I believe, interact with Din and the Baby Yoda effects, or rather the Baby Yoda arc, and will affect us all as we go forward. Because, you know, Boba Fett was very smart, and he fought against the, he fought against the nascent rebellion, so he knows about Yoda. I mean, there are a lot of moving parts here when you go and bring in the shows as well.
I have a question for you too.
Yes.
Would you want to see Boba continue on the path, the personality path they laid out for him in the original series, in the prequels, or do you want to see a redeemed Boba Fett?
So I want to see him actually do something, because here's the thing. He hasn't done jack shit. Like, people, I mean, he's cool. Much. He hasn't done much.
He's a bad guy.
He is, and he's he got the Phasma. He's basically, you know, the Phasma before Phasma. He didn't really get to do a whole lot. And I would love to see him actually do something. I mean, I still don't get how people just, like, absolutely fawn and love over this character when he doesn't do anything.
Because he's cool looking.
He's, and that's the only reason, basically. And so I would like to actually see him do something. I want to see him, you know, speak more, I guess. And I want to see him actually, you know, be the Boba Fett that we may have heard of in the past, but maybe doing it for things other than himself, maybe doing things for good.
Yeah, I think I'm feeling an Unforgiven vibe here. Again, a Clint Eastwood pull, but it's one of those things where he's going to come out of retirement. I think we will get some payoff to see why he was the legend that he was.
I agree. And so that wraps up the episode, basically. That's it, the end. So I have a question for you two. How do you think the rest of the season is going to play out, and how do you think the season will end? I want to get your predictions now.
Ooh, I mean, this is a big opener.
Yeah.
It'll be hard to keep this up, this pace. You know, because, like, if I have to give it a number, this is a 10 out of 10 episode for me.
Agreed.
It's definitely one of the best. Very, very well done. Well executed. Where's it going from here? Well, you know, it's hard for me to wrestle with all the rumors, you know, about certain actors leaving and not being in the show for very long. So I really don't know. I would love to see Ahsoka, just because I'm an Ahsoka fangirl. But again, you know, we have issues with the actress who may have been tapped to play Ahsoka. So there's conflicting thoughts there. I don't know. I honestly don't know where I feel this is going.
Lawrence, what about you?
I'm going to agree 10 out of 10. It lacked for nothing. Even the music cues and sound effects, as you alluded to earlier, I can't appreciate it enough. I do think we'll see Ahsoka. I even am beginning to wonder if General Hera will make a cameo, if nothing else.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
I'm just getting some vibe off of that because she's in Squadrons. But I will say, I think, I'm not sure if we're looking at a buddy cop type thing, but I think we'll have a lot of Boba Fett. I don't think you bring something so shocking to the audience and then you don't pay off on it. Mm-hmm. So I don't expect it to, like I said, to be a buddy cop film for five of the episodes, but I think we're going to have a lot more interaction. And that's where I think Ahsoka comes in, because she's had to deal with Boba Fett essentially on the other side of it, you know, competing arcs back in the day in the animated shows and all that. So I think there will become an inflection point where, like, all the different threads are going to come together. How it will ultimately end in, say, episodes 8, 9, 10, no way of knowing, but I think we are looking at some sort of big payoff here.
I agree. So I think it's going to, again, episode 10 out of 10 for me, I think it's going to end with Moff Gideon, kind of how they ended with season 1. Because we still haven't seen many of the trailers or anything like that, but I think he's going to be towards the end because of his story and with the Darksaber and everything. I think also we will see Ahsoka at the very end, because if this was Tatooine, I'm going to place a bet now then that ice planet that we saw is going to be Ilum. And I'm going to say that he takes Baby Yoda there, and the last shot that we see is a hooded Ahsoka, and she walks out of the cave, or we see her in some respect, and she says, you know, a line or two or whatever. But I think that's how the season's going to end.
I mean, I guess if for whatever reason he can't get him to whatever the Yoda species is, if he can't get him to those people, the next best step would be getting him to the Jedi.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And
which, that's sort of the path.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Luke is a known Jedi, and there's a few others, but really it's, you know, Luke and Ahsoka. So at this time, at least. And I guess Leia.
And I do want to add one thing. In the same way that I thought it was well done not to have it all about Baby Yoda, I'm glad that we didn't open up, I'm sorry, just to jump back one second, on more about the Darksaber. I thought it was awesome. Let's the world keeps moving on. We don't know what else is happening there. We'll get that, you know, in the coming season or coming episode. So that was very well done.
So that about wraps us up here, guys. It was a lot to talk about, but we're so happy that we did. Real quick, don't forget to follow us on Echo Station Cast on the Twitters. We cannot wait to talk more Mandalorian with you guys, because this will go through basically until the end of the year. So we can't wait for that.
One bright shining thing throughout the rest of this year.
Exactly.
Yes.
We're going to apologize ahead of time because our episode releases Wednesday, and that happens to be the day after the U.S. elections. So if we don't have our usual pep in our step, that is why. So we're going to apologize right now for that. So real quick, Lawrence, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I really, really enjoyed it. And it's always good to go in and talk Star Wars with fellow fans.
Yeah, thank you. We've been meaning to have Lawrence on for months now.
Thank you. I'm anytime, I am more than willing. So just, you know, send out the Jedi signal.
Absolutely. We will. So real quick, where can people follow you on social media? If you are on social media, that is.
Basically, I'm only on Twitter. It's at Lawrence_Green. I will go ahead and say, kind of hooking back to what you just said, maybe wait until after the election, because mostly it's election stuff right now. Not too much Star Wars talk. Although every now and again, a really nice Star Wars piece, I will retweet it or post something up.
So, Chris, where can they follow you, my dear?
As always, you can find me on the Twitter sphere at The Dirt Witch, and on Instagram at Chris Jaded. That's JADED.
And then you can find me on the Instagrams and the Facebooks at House of Turner Cosplay, and then on the Twitters at IR Turner, and of course, again, at Echo Station Cast on Twitter. We're on Spreaker, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, basically anywhere where you subscribe to get your podcasts, we are on there. And also don't forget that if you guys leave us a review on one of these sites, we will be shouting you out on a future episode. And so we want to get those shout outs going, want to get some reviews going in. So do you two have anything else to say before we go?
If you have commentary, hit us up on Twitter, let us know. You know, yes. What did you think of the episode? What are your theories?
We had a poll. We had a poll, and everyone said the top answer was OMFG, I loved it. So,
yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, I was going to say, just I would love to go in and definitely get, you know, feedback from the fans if they feel we saw what they saw, you know, the arc of Din and where we're going from here going forward.
Yeah, it's going to be a great season, I can tell. And so many great episodes for Chris and I to record in the near future. So, but until then, guys, stay happy, stay healthy, and may the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.